mm-hmm. you don't have the right to force me to do or not do anything unless I'm harming someone else. Because if I'm harming someone else, if I'm using violence, if I'm coercing someone else to do something, then I'm breaking my own morality. And that's why it's excluded in agorism, because you have to stay consistent.
And that's true freedom right there, is when you own yourself and you can make your own choices over everything.
Welcome to the Off-Grid Outpost podcast, where we discuss the journey to real liberty through self-sufficiency, counter-economics, non-aggression, and the agora.
The Outpost represents the border between societal norm and the pioneer spirit. Every episode contains practical, philosophical, and technical information you can use to gain the freedom you deserve.
Welcome, everyone, to the Off-Grid Outpost podcast. I am Regina, and I'm here with my cohort.
Good morning.
And today is the continuation of What is Agorism? Part 2.
Yeah. We kind of left a cliffhanger last week.
We did leave a cliffhanger on a little bit of purpose, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, I want you to listen to this episode, too.
Yeah. Well, in agorism, it's a not very well known. It's not a very well known term. I actually didn't even hear the term until you brought it up to me about a month ago, so.
Right.
Yeah. Well, let's keep rolling with it. So we were about to break out on the topic of the different types of markets within agorism and counter economics.
Yeah, we were talking about the different markets that are described with agorism, and you have the white, they're assigned colors, and you have the white, the pink, the red, the gray, and the black. And the white market is anything that is legal or sanctioned by the state, which is nonviolent. So that's most of the laws and codes. And
yeah, that's like shopping at Walmart.
Yeah, yeah. So it's nonviolent activities that are sanctioned by the government. And then you move into the pink market, which are violent activities which are sanctioned by the government. So that would include being arrested. That would include the death penalty. That would include war, you know, going and killing other people for your country. Those are all violent acts, and they're sanctioned by the government. Taxation.
Yeah, that's interesting. Mm-hmm. That's an interesting concept, because I've never heard of the pink market, and I'd probably go out on a limb and say most of our listeners haven't. So when someone gets arrested, they're going to have to pay fines and penalties and things and go into the prison system or jail system potentially, and that's all money-making schemes.
Yeah, and it's all done against their will, so it's violent.
Yep.
But it's legalized. It's just legalized violence.
That's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Legalized and also profitable violence.
Right. Yeah, for sure.
Well, because when you put a criminal into the justice system, that's all. I mean, they're making tons of money out of this prison system. The food, the clothing, the guards, that whole thing is a money-making scheme based off of violence that is legal for government standards.
Right. And so the pink market is usually just things that the government says it's okay for them to do to us. That's usually the pink market. It's all the violent acts that the government has said it's okay for them to do.
It's okay for them to detain us against our will and throw us into a box behind bars and profit off of us, because they do profit. They charge what? They pay criminals in jail like 15 cents an hour to make license plates. things like that.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know about all of that. I really don't know how that system works. I know it's very profitable for private companies who are in bed with the government, for sure.
Yeah.
And from there, you move into the red market, which is any violent act that is also prohibited by the government. So you have basically anything that the government says is legal for them to do, it's not legal for you to do. So that all falls under the red market. And then things like murder and rape and all the things that we typically can all agree on that we shouldn't be doing to each other, that's all red market if it's violent and the government says you can't do it.
Well, and it differs from the black market because people tend to put that kind of stuff like snuff films and human trafficking, that kind of thing, into the black hat, the black market scape. But agorists actually section it out of black market and make it into the red market scape.
Right. Because the government says there's just two markets. There's what we say you can do and there's what we say you can't do. So for them, there's only two markets, the white market and the black market.
Yeah.
But as agorists, we believe anything that's a nonviolent consensual act is okay to do, whether the government says it's okay or whether they don't. And so that's where we move into the gray market, which are acts that the government says is legal if you do them in this particular way and follow their guidelines, but you do them without following their guidelines. And that's where permits and licenses and things like that come in. The act itself is not illegal, but the way that you do it is. And then from there, you go into the black market, which is...
Well, before we do that, as an example for a gray market would be anything as innocent as your kid's lemonade stand. Mm-hmm. And technically, you're supposed to have a permit for the lemonade stand, and technically, you're supposed to pay taxes on the income that that lemonade stand makes, which is all kind of ridiculous and overbearing. So...
Right.
That would be a gray market space. A garage sale would be a gray market space because you're technically supposed to be permitted and licensed and pay tax on that.
Mm-hmm.
A flea market, a farmer's market, a roadside stand, those are all very gray market areas.
Right. Or just operating your own little business and not having a business license. In a lot of jurisdictions, in most jurisdictions, you're supposed to have a business license to operate any kind of business. And so if you don't have that business license through your local municipality or your county or your state, then technically you're not supposed to run a business.
Yeah.
That's gray market.
Okay.
You know, running, cutting people's hair out of your house, another gray market. Just all of that kind of stuff, really. It's just driving without a driver's license, that's gray market. Because the act of driving is not illegal. But if you don't have a license, you're not doing it correctly.
Okay, that makes sense.
While we're talking about the gray market, too, I would also like to mention our PDF, which is basically a list of 131 ways to make money within the gray market using counter economics. So if you want to start a little side business, a little hustle, a small business to grow it into a full-time income, we've got a PDF that gives you just all kinds of ideas. And you can download that on our website. Just go to the homepage. There's a little deal right there on the homepage where you can, you just give us your email and we send it straight to your inbox.
Yeah, it's really a good document. It will get your brain going on all sorts of different ways you can make money without having to interact with the government. And then once you decide on what you want to do, you can move into our ebook, How to Start a Stealth Business by Using Counter Economics. And that's how we tell you how to implement your chosen niche without getting the government involved.
Yeah. And how to, the different techniques to fly under their radar and not get busted by them, and you know, just kind of the nuts and bolts, the do's and don'ts of how to do it safely and discreetly.
Yeah, and we both have a lot of experience with it, so I feel that we could say we're experts on the topic.
Yeah, without a doubt.
You know, and we mainly stay within the gray market in the book and also in the PDF, but there's a lot of black market opportunities out there, and that's when your own, I guess you have to make your own decisions on your own morality, but the black market essentially is you're now doing something that the government deems illegal, but it's happening between two consensual parties. Therefore, agorists find it perfectly acceptable to move within the black markets.
Right.
So an example would be a prostitute has made a consensual decision to have relations with a John who is also consensual. Well, that's a transaction between two consenting adults. So why is it bad? It may be quote-unquote illegal because a government's putting their morality onto you, but you don't feel anything wrong with it, and she doesn't feel anything wrong with it, so it's acceptable in the world of agorism to do that.
Right. And, you know, maybe you personally think it's wrong, but do you have the right to force that opinion on someone else?
Yeah. You may think it's wrong, so you don't participate in it. Doesn't mean the next guy shouldn't participate in it.
Right.
But that's a big difference between prostitution and human trafficking. Human trafficking is against someone's consent, so that goes into the red market, which is not acceptable in agorism.
That's right, yeah.
So, you know, you can apply this to pretty much every illegal type of thing that's nonviolent. So, drug dealing.
Mm-hmm.
And
or even
illegal arms dealing, things like that.
Or experimental drugs for health reasons, you know, that are sold in other countries that are strictly prohibited here.
Yeah.
There's a lot of things that are in the black market that, you know, it's just something the government has said you can't do. And a lot of times, it's not always because of morality. A lot of times, it's because of lobbying. You know, the pharmaceutical company doesn't want that cheaper drug from Mexico being sold here because it cuts into their profits. Things like that. It's not always just something that we morally find wrong.
Well, just because it's illegal doesn't mean it's not in your best interest.
Yeah. Because we've talked about before how whether something is right or wrong or whether it's legal or illegal, they're not related. They're not the same thing.
Yeah, they're two different things. Because there was a point in time where slave owners were protected and the people trying to help free these slaves and help escape these slaves, that was a highly illegal activity.
Yeah, they were outlaws.
They were total outlaws with the penalty of death.
Mm-hmm.
And now fast forward 100 years later and we look back on those times and there's no way like we would ever accept that nowadays, but back then there was no way they would accept it the other way around. So
yeah,
morality is always shifting, so the laws are always shifting per the times, per who's, you know, paying the big bucks. I'm sure slave owners were lobbying back then.
Well, yeah, and that's all government is lobbying. I mean, whether you're a paid lobbyist or whether you're a voter, that's all government is trying to force what you think is right and wrong onto the larger population.
Which is messed up.
those people that helped the slaves back then, they were outlaws then. We look at them as heroes now.
Exactly. Which is why we find moving within black markets acceptable, because their laws are always shifting based on who has the most money for their own personal interests. Just like we saw, you know, the most current situation, I would say, is pot, you know, marijuana.
Mm-hmm.
Back in the 90s, if you were caught growing pot, if you were caught selling pot, you're in prison.
Right.
And now it's just becoming more and more legalized because they can't control it. So now they're shifting on us.
Well, so, and the morality of that subject has shifted.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot more people
now. It's no longer reefer madness.
Right. There's a lot more people now who accept it as something that's not going to make you go crazy or, you know, it's all just nuts.
Yeah, I mean, it was so demonized back in the 50s, so if you even had a joint on you, you're probably going to get locked up over the weekend. Now, no, it's just, you know, it doesn't even matter anymore. You have a joint on you, that's acceptable. So, again, we see the shift of morality within the government to allowing this. So, what made it bad back then?
Just perception, that's it.
It's just perception. Yeah, it's definitely interesting. And within our ebook, we go into a lot of that, you know, shift of morality, the shift of the perception, and basically the philosophy that you do not have to participate in their laws because of these reasons.
Right.
As long as it's nonviolent. That's the main thing, is as long as you stay out of the nonviolent, the coercion, then you're pretty much operating within agorism, agoristic principles.
Yeah, and that comes from the idea that you own yourself, and so you have the right to not be violated in any way. And so that's why the agorist, anarchist doesn't believe in violence, because if you believe that I own myself, I should be able to rule myself, so there should be no rulers, it's because you have no right over me. We're all equal. So you don't have the right to force me to do or not do anything unless I'm harming someone else. Because if I'm harming someone else, if I'm using violence, if I'm coercing someone else to do something, then I'm breaking my own morality. And that's why it's excluded in agorism, because you have to stay consistent.
And that's true freedom right there, is when you own yourself and you can make your own choices over everything.
Right.
That's true freedom, not the phony freedom that we've been sold our whole lives.
Yeah.
But if you play in the black markets, you are facing potential consequences, so you have to make that decision for yourself as well.
Right, you have to weigh the risk. Which you have to look at it.
Yeah, you have to weigh the risks. I feel more comfortable staying within the gray markets, personally.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think there's really anything within the black markets that really piques my interest to pursue.
Right.
But there's a lot of money in those markets as well. So you take the risk, you make a lot of money, but you could also end up being thrown in jail or prison. So that's all at your discretion, really.
Right. And, you know, someone might say, well, I don't want to deal in the black markets, and that's why I pay my taxes. Well, trying to avoid paying your taxes is gray market. It's not black market, because you're earning a living, and there's no law against earning a living. If you're not paying your taxes, right, you're just not doing it correctly in their eyes. And so it's a gray market activity to try and avoid paying as much money as you can to the government.
Yeah, I mean, gray market activities are technically white market. You're just not following through with your licensing, your permitting, your registering, and your taxation.
Right.
Yeah, that's all very interesting. Well, I would say that most people probably have never heard of pink and red market before being segregated out. But it's a huge thing to segregate those out and to see them for what they are.
That's exactly right. And it all comes back to the idea that agorism is a very cohesive philosophy that is not contradictory. You can't find any contradictions within it. And that's the purpose of describing the pink and the red market, is to show that there's no contradiction.
Yep. Yeah, that makes sense to me. So then there's also the different class types within agorism, which is our final piece of information we are going to share with you today to describe agorism.
Yeah. So within agorism, there are two class structures, and they are the parasite class and the producer class. The parasite class consists of anyone who earns their living through the political means. And the reason that they're called a parasite class is because the only way they can do that is by sucking up the labor and production of other people through taxation. And this is hard for people to accept who work within government, because they are trained to believe that they're doing a civil service. They're a servant. They're helping people. And to go through your life believing that you are helping people, it is hard to take a good look at that and say, the only way I get a paycheck is because someone else was forced to pay me. It's difficult to see that. And but that's the parasite class. And so that's going to include all of government employees. That's going to include politicians. It's going to include, even if you
military?
If what you do is
would
subsidized,
it be military too?
It would be military also. Yeah, because without taxation, military, or at least in the way that we do it, without the taxation, it doesn't exist. So someone is being robbed for you to get a paycheck, or for there to be a gun in your hand, or whatever. Someone has to be robbed for that to happen.
Yeah.
Because people don't pay taxes.
There's someone behind that money that doesn't agree with funding these projects or funding these things. They're getting 30%, 40% of their paycheck taken from them to fund something they don't agree with, basically.
Right. And so, because people don't pay taxes voluntarily.
No.
We talk as if we do. Everybody's got to pay their fair share. We're all trained that it's a voluntary act, but it's not. Because the real reason people don't pay their taxes is because they don't want to go to jail for not paying their taxes.
Exactly.
And if they were given the choice, even if you had a tax system that said you get to choose where your tax dollars go, you would say, okay, well, I don't mind paying for the military, and I don't mind paying for low-income housing subsidies, and I don't pay. And so if you were given a choice, most people would not pay taxes. They would find ways to help people in other ways, through local community services, through church organizations, through nonprofit organizations, because all of those things are much more efficient than the government. And that's why people would choose them if they were given the choice.
Well, essentially, we can survive without the government, but the government cannot survive without us.
Right.
And we have been trained our whole lives to believe that if we remove government, that we would just spiral into chaos and horrible things would ensue.
Mm-hmm.
But once you start unpacking this concept, you realize that we would be better off without the government, because everything would become a private business, and they would strive to provide the best possible product, the best possible service for the best price, whereas government organizations work in the complete opposite way of they will only receive the same funding the next year if they suck up all the funding they got this year. So it makes it, they're incentivized to go the opposite direction.
Mm-hmm.
Of being basically the worst service and product provider in existence.
Right. Yeah, that's exactly right, because it's a monopoly. It is a full-fledged, true monopoly government. It's the only one in existence, in my opinion.
Everything could be privatized, and it would be supported by the community. If fire stations became privatized and the fire stations now had to be as efficient and productive as possible in order for people to support them, we would not only have a better fire station system, people would gladly pay for that service.
And it would cost less.
And it would cost less. Way less.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very possible to live without government, but the government cannot live without us. And that's what creates the parasitic system, the parasitic monopoly system that it is today.
Right.
Which takes a minute for your brain to wrap around it, because at first it's almost offensive.
Yeah, and I can understand why it's offensive, especially if you're in one of those positions where you are trained to believe that you're a public servant and you're doing good, or in the case of the military, you're protecting the country, or in the case of a police officer, you are, you know, protecting the civilians of your community. I mean, I can understand the offensiveness of the statement, but you just have to step back from that and look at it for what it truly is.
Yeah. If you're able to lift the veil, which is going to be harder for others and easier for others. For me, I don't have any friends or family really in the public servant system, so it's easier for me to step back and see it.
Mm-hmm.
But if your family is a police family or a firefighter family or a, you know, any sort of public servant military family, it's very difficult to step back and see it that way.
Yeah.
And we delve more into this into Unmasking the State episode. If you want to get a little bit more deep dive onto this topic, because it is a very abrasive topic, but it's a huge part of what agorism is.
Mm-hmm.
The philosophy of agorism. I mean, I see it. At first, I didn't see it. But once I started seeing it, I really started seeing it.
Yeah, it becomes really clear, especially once you eliminate all of the contradictions. I mean, for me, that's what it was when I first ran across it. It was, you know, because in my life, I try to believe as many true things as I can and believe as few false things as I can. And weeding out contradictions is a good way to get to there. I mean, nobody has a belief system that is 100% right, because we're human and we don't know everything. So you can't know what is right all the time, but you can eliminate contradictions in your thought pattern. And that's what, for me, was so attractive to agorism, is that they're just,
yep.
I can't find any contradictions in its philosophy.
Yeah, and that's really interesting, because most, if not all, are contradictory to some degree, and agorism is just so pure
right.
in its truth. So once you start applying that truth and that purity into all these different systems we live in, you really start seeing the fatal flaws and the massive contradictions.
Right.
Once you change the lenses you're looking out of.
Mm-hmm.
And it gets really interesting. Because you start kind of psychologically changing, and you just start seeing things. You just start wanting to opt out, basically. And that's where I've arrived, is once I've started going down, you know, the agorism rabbit hole, it just makes me more and more want to opt out of these systems that have been set up.
Right.
Within reason. I'm not going to go live in a cave.
Yeah, and that's where the...
I mean, I probably would live in a cave. That'd be kind of cool.
Yeah, I would too, as long
as I could get... Like for a bug out strategy?
I would too, as long as I could get cell service.
Mm-hmm. As long as we had internet access to make our podcast, I'd come out of the cave for that. And yeah. Then the rest of the time, I'd just be in the cave. Screw it.
Yeah, so that's the classes. You have it's easiest to understand the classes by first describing the parasite class, because if you're not in the parasite class, you're part of the productive class. So that's the easiest way to look at it.
Yeah, I mean, it makes sense to me. And then you can choose to be a part of the opt-out class, which is where I'm heading, where I'm just like, I don't agree with any of it anymore, really.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't align myself as Republican. I don't align myself as Democrat. I don't align myself even with really the independent stuff. So now I've found something I can align with that I feel is where I've always been in my heart, but I just never had anything to attach to. I've never had this identity to attach to.
Mm-hmm. You never had a definition for it, for how you felt.
Yeah, exactly. I just always considered myself kind of the oddball.
Mm-hmm.
You know, of what everyone else was doing around me. I'm like, I don't want to participate in that. I don't want anything to do with that.
Yeah.
While everyone's all busy arguing over here about everything and butting heads, I'm like, I don't even want to be involved with any of you.
Yeah. Yeah, so, I mean, I guess that pretty much wraps up the introduction of agorism. And you can go a lot deeper in agorism, and I'm sure we'll have some future episodes where we go deep in very specific parts of agorism. But yeah, if you're...
Yeah, applicable agorism is kind of where I'm at with it, you know. How do you apply it?
Yeah.
And there's many ways, like, for example, not having a driver's license. How do you apply that in your everyday life?
Mm-hmm.
How do you apply not getting licensing, permitting, registration on all sorts of things?
Right.
You know, how do you make it through life without going into the cave as an agorist?
It does create inconvenience, and it does create risk. And so as an individual, you just have to look at all that and decide what you're willing to give up and what you're willing to risk.
Well, and it's more comfortable to just go with the system and choose one of their sides.
Well, sure, it's more, and the system was designed that way to make it most comfortable and easiest for you to live by choosing a side. And that, you know, government as a whole doesn't care which side you choose, as long as you choose a side. As far as
they want you to
within their system.
Fit in their narrative, yeah. They want you to fit within their narrative in their system, and that way you can just pass the buck of morality on to the next guy.
Mm-hmm.
Just pay your taxes and we'll take care of your morality for you. So you can just live in your little comfortable bubble. So once you've burst your bubble, it's a little uncomfortable and you have to go out of your box and you have to put some effort into it. It's like taking your own responsibility back.
Yeah.
So once you've, you know, made that choice, there are the risks, there are the discomforts, there are the extra works that you have to do. To me, it's worth it. To you, maybe it's not. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. And it's just an individual choice, yeah.
Yeah, I would love for us to write a handbook, the Agorist's Handbook, of how to navigate the modern world as an agorist, and all our little tips and tricks and techniques. That'd be kind of interesting.
That would be cool, yeah.
I don't think there's really much out there. I know there's philosophical agorism books, but I've never seen much on the applicable agorism.
There's not a lot of how-to manuals. There's a lot about the philosophy.
Maybe we need to write
one. Yeah, for sure.
Maybe we're the ones that are meant to write this stuff and get it out there. I mean, we've already started.
Yeah.
With the How to Build a Stealth Business Using Counter-Economics Handbook.
Right.
And the PDF, 131 Ways to Make Money Using Counter-Economics. So we've already kind of started.
Yeah, we just keep going down the road.
Mm-hmm. Because that's where the questions come in. It's like, oh, well, that sounds all great and dandy, guys, that you're going to not pay taxes and you're not going to have a license and you're going to live this lifestyle, but how the hell am I going to do it?
Yeah.
Well, maybe we should help people understand how to do it.
Yeah, I'm all in.
Next ebook idea. We only have about 500 ideas of what we want to do and write.
Yeah.
We'll get there. We're getting there.
If you like what we're doing and you want to help us by supporting us, I mean, there's different ways you can do it. you can go to our channel. We have it, obviously, we've talked about our ebook. You can purchase it. That helps us out. You can also go to our resources page where we have links to different products that we recommend. Anytime you purchase one of those products, we get a little commission that every little bit helps. And specifically for the Amazon products, if you go and click one of the Amazon links and buy something on Amazon, we get credit for a little bit of commission. And it doesn't matter what you buy. You don't even have to buy the what we're recommending. So
yeah,
that's one way you can help support our work. I mean, we think it's important or we wouldn't be doing it. And if you think it's important too and want to help, that's just a simple way you can help us.
Yeah. Yeah, we've put a lot of time and effort into all of this content creation, and we'd like to keep going with it. So at some point, we're not going to be able to keep continuing without listener support. And you're getting value in return. So buying our ebook, right now it's on sale. You can go to theoffgridoutpost.com. It's right on the main page. You know, that helps us out. Every sale helps keep this project going.
Right.
And who knows what it's going to be turning into. I mean, it seems like every single day we make progress on it, more ideas come out. And it's pretty exciting where it's heading.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
For sure. Well, what is our next episode is going to be an off-grid pillar. I just don't remember which one it's going to be.
Water systems.
Water systems. Okay, I'm super excited to nerd out to that. I'm an off-grid water systems nerd. If you go to MaximumOffGrid.com, that's like the hugest portion of my website is dedicated to off-grid water system building.
Right.
It's
well, water
cool.
is so important,
yeah.
You know.
I don't know why.
It's...
Yeah, it is. And all the techniques to have an off-grid water system is just really cool. There's so many different techniques. Once you get off municipal systems that you can build, and your purification and your filtration and your pump system, it's all fascinating to me in a very nerdy way. Plus, I love water. Who doesn't love water?
Who doesn't love water?
Cool. Well, if you enjoyed the show, please leave us a rating on whatever platform you're using. It helps us get found. Visit us at theoffgridoutpost.com for more unique content. You can email us at Cyrus at the off... Nope, I was about to say the off-grid maker. Well, you can email him there too. Cyrus at theoffgridoutpost.com or me, Regina, at theoffgridoutpost.com. Any questions or comments you have, you can leave us a voice message, which we haven't gotten one yet, so I'm just waiting for one to pop up. Leave us a voice message. The link is in the show notes. Cool. Well, we will catch you all the next time.
Talk to you later.
Later.
Here's a little teaser for what's coming next week.
I agree. If you can harness the natural water around you with minimal digging, minimal pumping, you're definitely better off. And I feel that people tend to immediately go to digging a well as their first water resource. And I don't think well systems are all that cracked up to be what people make them to be, really.
Thanks for listening to the Off-Grid Outpost podcast. If you enjoyed the show, don't forget to subscribe so you can get all the new episodes.